This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
First and foremost, neighbors, we've snagged a new sponsor. It's Audible.com. They've got a special place to get a free book with a trial offer, Audible.com/Paracast. Now, our listeners may have noticed last week that Chris O'Brien didn't sound too terrific. And the reason is he was suffering from a lung problem, apparently COPD. It's not a trivial thing. It's a pretty serious ailment. And the flu. And a couple of days after we did the recording session, he went to the hospital for treatment, which was a good idea. Get the doctor the chance to have at it there and see what's going on with him and to help him on the road to recovery. So he's still in the hospital as we do the show. And he is sounding better to me. He is recovering. He's raring to go. So hopefully he'll be back on the show next week or the week thereafter. So we all wish the best. Get well, Chris O'Brien. In the meantime, we have a guest co-host, and we have, I guess we'll call him a guest moderator or a panelist. We have Erica Lukes joining us this week again after being here last week.
I'm excited.
Now, if Chris wasn't here last week, you would have had to have interviewed yourself.
Well, that could have been quite interesting.
Especially if you disagreed.
Well, I'll leave that to you. That's why you needed to be there.
Right. And direct from his palatial estate in Scotland?
That'll be me, Gogs Mackay, yeah. And I was just going to say that my own father has COPD. He's actually in hospital right now too. And I had a friend who smoked a lot, died from it a couple of years ago, but he had it like really bad. So it is a serious thing, and I'm glad that Chris is in hospital getting the right treatment.
That's one of the things that took down Leonard Nimoy, you know, COPD.
That's right.
Right. He was also a lifelong smoker. Let it be a warning to you. Anyone in our crew here, and that means you too, special guest Kevin Randall, any of you smoke?
I used to smoke LZs, but that was in Vietnam, and I used to smoke champagne, so that really doesn't count.
I used to smoke, but I switched to the electronic ones 7 years ago, and I've never smoked tobacco since, not even once.
Does that make a difference? Does that help your lungs?
Do you feel absolutely. I felt the difference just within a few short weeks. You know, I couldn't expectorate, you know, cough up anything, even if I tried just now. My lungs are clear.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
The closest I came was as a teenager, and I gave it up real fast. I won't say I didn't smoke anything. I'll leave the definition of that, depending on whether you live in a state where it's legal.
Interesting.
Isn't it?
It is.
So let's move on here. We asked Kevin Randall to come on because he recently wrote a book called Roswell in the 21st Century, and he kind of previewed that book the last time he was on the show last year. And we thought it's time to maybe put the wraps on Roswell once and for all, because this has gone on for so many years, and it appears to be less than we expected to be. Okay, but Kevin, before we start with that, and there'll be a lot of questions from listeners as we progress, and we should reacquaint people with the legend very briefly, real briefly, and that is we're talking about a case here that after the initial publicity, oh, it's a flying disc, oh, it's a balloon, it kind of dies down, and wasn't rediscovered until over 30 years later.
Well, that's not quite right, because there had been mentions of the Roswell case in various books over the years after 1947. Frank Edwards in Flying Saucer Serious Business, which was published in 1965, has two or three paragraphs about it, and he got practically everything wrong other than the name Roswell and that the Air Force had explained it as a balloon. So there were mentions of the case, but it sort of broke open, after Jesse Marcel, who was the air intelligence officer in Roswell in 1947, was telling friends on his the CB radios, shortwave radio, his ham pals, that he had picked up pieces of a flying saucer. And through that, that information got to Stan Friedman. Friedman talked to Marcel and for over a year didn't do anything with it because they didn't have a good date for it. And Bill Moore found a picture of Marcel in the newspapers in 1947. And from there, they kind of put together a short book, The Roswell Incident, on the thing. And it kind of grew out of that until an awful lot of us were looking at the Roswell case thinking that this may be the one that substantiates alien visitation. And it seemed to be a very robust case with lots of witnesses and lots of things going on. So it was a very important case in the early 1990s up through about the end of the decade, end of the century, end of the millennium.
It just went on and on. And as you mentioned, I don't make a big deal of the Frank Edwards book because it really wasn't noticed then. You had to have the contact with Marcel later on. It's just another case mentioned a few paragraphs in somebody's UFO book. And to be very frank, I knew slightly Frank Edwards in the last year or two of his life, and he wasn't really a crack researcher. He was a storyteller, right?
Yes, he got a lot of details wrong in his books. I think he wrote basically from memory, and he didn't bother to check to see if his memory was right. But there were other mentions of the Roswell case periodically. Lydia Sleppy, who was the teletype operator at the radio station in Albuquerque, who was talking to Johnny McBoyle when he was feeding her the story of the Roswell crash and received the information that, to stop this transmission. That appeared in a magazine article in 1976, for example. So there were little bits and pieces of it scattered around, but nobody was really looking at it, especially when you start talking about a UFO crash. If you remember, back in the 1950s, there was a book called Behind the Flying Saucers, which alleged a crash in Aztec, New Mexico in 1948, and that was thoroughly debunked in the 1950s, right after the story had come out, and almost every ufologist just didn't even want to listen to stories of UFO crashes. It just, that didn't happen. They weren't interested. And it was actually Len Stringfield who had begun researching other tales of UFO crashes quietly behind the scenes. And he did a paper, I think it was in 1978, as a matter of fact, talking about some of these UFO crashes that he'd heard about and saying that maybe we ought to look at these things a little more closely. And he had talked to Marcel as well, although in the paper, there's no mention of the Marcel case. In the presentation he gave in, I think it was Ohio for the MUFON symposium, that had been added to his presentation. So there were those things going on. I'm not sure that the Roswell incident made much of a splash either in ufology, and it wasn't until the Center for UFO Studies actually had asked Friedman if there was more work to be done in Roswell. And Friedman says, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that should be done. And they began their investigation, invited me into it simply because of my military background. They thought that I would have a better chance of relating to military people. I'd understand the jargon. I'd understand what they're talking about. Where a civilian who'd not served in the military might not be as cognizant of what they were trying to say. So it was after that point, around 1990, that things began to blow up. NBC's Unsolved Mysteries did a segment on the Roswell case. So there's a national television program back in 1989 doing something on it. So that is sort of the evolution. So it was talked about in 1947. The military, the government said, "Nah, it was a weather balloon. Don't worry about it." And then there were little bits and pieces that dribbled out until Marcel really kind of started the whole thing rolling in 1978.
So we blame Marcel for everything that happened, huh?
I'm going to. I think that's fair. You know, if he hadn't been blabbing, we wouldn't be talking about this now.
Okay, but how, from the point that it blew up, what made this the case in the UFO field? Whatever you think about it, every time we've said on the PowerCast, I guess we're not going to do anything else on Roswell. And then guess what? There's a new book out, there's something new, even when something ends up being a train wreck, like the Not Roswell Slides. An obvious train wreck, we have to come back to it. It remains fodder for pop culture. It remains a key plot point still in the X-Files, even in the reboot of X-Files. Well, Roswell may have involved a spaceship and we reverse engineered everything. It's not the presence of aliens. It's still the forefront is still there, Roswell. We've got Kevin Randall. The book is Roswell in the 21st Century. Our guest co-host is Erica Lukes. Gogs Mackay is a member of the panel. You're in
the Paracast.
Here's a shout-out to Audible for supporting the Paracast. You know, for a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial, go to audible.com/paracast. You know, Audible has an unmatched selection of audiobooks, original shows, news, comedy, and lots more. They even feature books from our paranormal corner of the universe, such as the one I'm listening to right now, Fact, Fiction, and Flying Saucers. You know, we had the authors on our show featuring Stan Friedman and Kathleen Marden. Once again, here's that special offer for listeners to the Paracast. Audible is offering a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial. It's easy to download and listen at home or while you're on the road, especially if you're stuck in traffic and need to just chill. You can also listen at the gym, wherever you have the time to give a listen. Just go to audible.com/paracast to sign up and get your free book. audible.com/paracast. It's that easy.
Dangerous blood clot device alert. If you or a loved one had an IVC filter placed to prevent blood clots from traveling to your heart or lungs and suffered an injury, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. The FDA warns that IVC filters may cause serious complications, such as heart or lung damage, internal bleeding, and even death. These dangerous blood clot devices can break, and the metal fragments can travel to your heart or lungs, causing serious injuries. If you or a loved one suffered organ damage or other injuries from an IVC filter, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. Act now. Time is limited to file a claim. For a free consultation and free information, call Injury Help Desk at 800-478-1507. 800-478-1507. 800-478-1507.
This is an advertisement. Paid non-attorney spokesperson. InjuryHelpDesk.com is responsible for this advertisement. Principal Office, Las Vegas, Nevada.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
All right, guys, we're ready for our four-season sunroom, and Daddy's going to get a rec room with refreshments.
Oh, no. We'll be sleeping under the stars.
Mom, what about the runway? You know, the fun.
Nice try, little bro. It's a gym. My gym.
Hey,
Grandma's getting her Four Seasons garden room. Weather tight and still like being outdoors.
Maybe a living room. Oh, no, wait. A family hub.
Yeah!
No matter what the budget, the season, or the climate, Four Season Sunrooms let you and your family enjoy the outdoors inside. Call now to hear more about these great offers from the premier manufacturer of sunrooms since 1975.
More reasons for four seasons now.
To find out more, call toll-free 800-848-6333. That's 800-848-6333.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey Purified Water. The Berkey guy provides the lowest priced filtration systems in every size. For incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency, get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Oh, I like the way she says that.
Why, thank you.
You're welcome. Kevin Randall is joining us. Let me just tell you, we've got a second radio show we'd like you to check out. It's called After the Paracast. And what it means is it's color commentary sometimes a backgrounder, sometimes a special interview, all sorts of good stuff. And the only way to get after the PowerCast is to be a member of the PowerCast Plus. Go to plus, P-L-U-S dot theparacast.com. That's P-L-U-S dot theparacast.com. And we also offer videos, selections of material from Paul Kimball's Other Side of Truth and more. Our rates start just $1.49 a week, about half what you'd pay for Starbucks. So give up the Starbucks and send the money to us. Plus dot theparacast.com. Kevin, we're dealing with the early days when Roswell was really taking off. Where did it make the jump to become the UFO case?
It promised everything. It promised a large number of credible witnesses, starting with the senior staff at the Roswell Army Airfield back in 1947 and dribbling all the way down into the lowest of the enlisted ranks. It promised a crashed flying saucer, which would prove that there's alien visitation. It promised details of the bodies, the alien creatures that had been killed in the crash. It promised everything you would need to prove that alien visitation was taking place. It promised all of that, and it seemed in the beginning that it was going to deliver on that, because we were finding witness after witness who had been involved in some fashion, who could talk about what the craft looked like, could talk about what the bodies looked like, talk about what was done, where it went. We were talking to people at the highest levels. We had general officers telling us about this. We had colonels telling us about this. So it promised all of this sort of information that would prove the case once and for all, and we would be done with arguing about whether alien visitation was taking place. Now we could take a step and say, okay, we know it's happening. What does it mean? What can we do about it? But it didn't deliver on any of those promises. But that's how it became so big.
Kevin Goggs here, I'd just like to jump in. Do you think kind of what you've just said could even be condensed down to the fact that this was a case where there was this initial press release that said, we have captured a flying saucer, and forget about what happened after and changing the stories, but that's got to be pretty unique in the field, is it? You know, a military press release that says, we've got one, that hasn't promised so much from that.
I think the problem with the press release is you have to put your mind back in 1947 and realize that flying disc and flying saucer was not synonymous with alien spacecraft. If you look at the newspaper articles that were going on in late June, early July of 1947, there was a lot of speculation about what these things really were, and one of the least likely explanations was some kind of interplanetary craft. They were thinking they might be from Venus, they might be from Mars. We now, of course, know that's not true. I'm not sure how you'd build a spacecraft on Venus when the surface of the planet is hot enough to melt lead.
At least you could do the raw ingredients there and just do all the molten metals, assemble them there, and then somehow transport them in a bucket into space. I'm kidding.
Absolutely. But I think if you look at it from that perspective, that it didn't necessarily translate into alien spacecraft, and then you look at the timeline of the events. They issued the press release around 2 o'clock in the afternoon, a Mountain Standard Time, later on the East Coast, of course. And then within hours, literally 3 hours, the explanation in General Ramey's office in Fort Worth was, well, no, it's just a weather balloon, a weather observation device that confused some people, and we've now got the explanation. And so you have a lower headquarters, which would be the 509th Bomb Group in Roswell, issuing a press release saying we have a flying disc, and then the higher headquarters coming out and saying, yeah, we've looked at this, it's nothing but a weather balloon. The press release is kind of an enigma if you put it in the context of what in the hell was the purpose of it, because all it did was generate a lot of problems, especially for us 50 years later. But I think the press release is interesting that they've got a flying saucer, but then they said, well, no, it's not really, it's a weather balloon, so don't worry about that sort of thing. There were other stories going on at the time in late June, early July of 1947 about other flying saucer crashes. There was one that came out of Montana, and a pilot who had been flying in the area, the Bitterroot Mountains in Montana, but was based in L.A., was telling his boss that they had approached some yo-yo-shaped objects, and one of them got caught in the prop wash of the airplane and plunged to its demise in the Bitterroot Mountains. And a couple of days later, that came out as a hoax. But there's all those sorts of things going on at the time, and nobody really has an answer. And nobody's, I shouldn't say nobody, few people were talking about it being any sort of extraterrestrial visitation. It was all terrestrially based for the most part. And the greatest worry was some kind of a Soviet secret weapon, or maybe a weapon being developed by the United States, either the Army Air Forces or the Navy, that was causing the sightings. And one psychologist or psychiatrist or a scientist said, well, the real problem is it's people coming out of dark movie theaters and looking up into a bright sky and they see spots in front of their eyes. That's a legitimate explanation that was printed in the newspapers. Admittedly, it's a dumb one, but they just didn't have an idea of what was going on, and alien visitation is kind of way down at the bottom of that list.
Big question I have to ask you here is, and maybe this goes back to some of the stuff that James Carrion has been talking about, the former director of MUFON, and he was saying the ghost lights, this is a way to spook the Soviets, I guess, in the early days of the Soviets. And then there was the other issue here where he thinks, I suspect, that Roswell was also something that we did. It might have been a test aircraft or something. He was going to have a book called The Roswell Deception, and I haven't seen what's going to be that yet, what that's going to be about. But isn't that something that would have been numeral uno to check first? Test aircraft, well, then balloons, or some combination thereof?
Well, I'm not sure it would be the first thing to check, but it's one thing that was checked. I mean, we went to, and I say we, Don Schmidt and I actually physically went to White Sands Missile Range and sat down with the historians there and looked through the records to see if it was some kind of a missile experiment that had gone awry. I think in May of 1947, they actually dropped a missile in Juarez, New Mexico. It got off range and fell in New Mexico, Juarez, Mexico. So we looked at all of that. I have a complete list of all the missile launches at White Sands in that time frame. They're all accounted for, so that's not an explanation. We looked for experimental aircraft and could find nothing that had crashed. We looked at regular military aircraft. We thought maybe it had been a B-29 that crashed with an atomic bomb on board. Back in 1947, the atomic bombs were actually, the shape, the size, was actually classified information. You couldn't even talk about what they looked like. Today, of course, there's pictures all over the internet to look for them. They looked sort of like Fat Man, which was one of the, I think, bomb dropped on Nagasaki in 1945. But we looked at all of that. We found stories. I think the Air Force dropped an atomic bomb in Albuquerque in 1957. We could find that stuff. So it might have been classified in the 1950s, but when we began our research, that information was available. We looked at all of that sort of thing.
Let's do a break here and look again on the other side. We've got Gox McKay and Erica Lukes helping me run the show with Kevin Randall. You're in
the podcast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Are you retired or facing retirement and you're afraid your income is going to be less than you'd like? I'm Pharmacist Keith. Dr. Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, and I want to show you a low-cost way to create your own business, working around your current schedule, creating extra income that will last for years to come by joining Dr. Wallach's crusades, spreading his message of better health. To learn more, visit radio.recordedvideo.com. That's radio.recordedvideo.com, radio.recordedvideo.com, or call 866-257-3105 for a recorded message.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson, Adam Pulaski of the Pulaski Law Firm with principal office in Houston, Texas, is the attorney responsible for the content of this ad. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention Xarelto users. If you or a loved one took Xarelto and suffered a serious bleeding event, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Xarelto is a popular prescription blood thinner used to prevent blood clots and protect patients from strokes. These serious bleeding events have led to numerous cases of hospitalization and even death. Phone lines are open 24/7. Call 800-261-0937. That's 800-261-0937.
The following is an incredible, life-changing, free offer for anyone with hearing problems who wants to start hearing more clearly again. We're now offering free in-home trials of a revolutionary hearing breakthrough called Listen Clear to anyone who calls this special toll-free number now. 1-800-719-4926. Call now and you'll also qualify for free shipping. Listen Clear is precisely designed by top audio engineers. It adjusts to let you find the perfect way to hear things crisply and clearly, wherever you are and whatever you're doing. And Listen Clear is so small and discreet, people usually don't even notice you're wearing it. And it's so lightweight, you may even forget you're wearing it too. Don't miss this special life-changing opportunity to hear things more clearly again for free with a 100% free in-home trial and free shipping. If you like it, you could even get free batteries for life. For free information, call now. 1-800-719-4926. That's 1-800-719-4926. 1-800-719-4926.
Attention small business owners. Want to save money on your employee health insurance plan? Learn the little-known solution that could save thousands of dollars on your health insurance benefits and save your employees money, too. Call Health Markets for a free consultation, and one of our 3,000 local agents will show you how to make healthcare reform work for you. We'll design customized solutions for your business that can lower healthcare costs for you and your employees. We'll work directly with you to determine your needs. We search thousands of health plans from over 180 health insurance companies nationwide. You'll also find out if tax credits could save you money. Best of all, the service is free of charge. See why Health Markets has enrolled Americans in more than 2 million insurance policies. You don't have to wait for open enrollment to lower your cost. Call now. Find out how much you and your employees could be saving.
Representatives are standing by to assist you. Call 800-930-5137. That's 800-930-5137. 800-930-5137.
The following statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Something shocking just happened in a Coast Guard unit in San Diego. The old guys in the unit have turned the tables and are now destroying the young bucks in head-to-head fitness tests. How is this even possible? Turns out the old guys in this unit have been part of a special test group for a doctor-formulated Fountain of Youth drink called Patriot Power Greens. Patriot Power Greens has been so effective for many of the older soldiers that it's made their achy joints, stiff muscles, and lack of energy a thing of the past. Previously, this drink was only available to elite military units. But for a limited time, the creator of Patriot Power Greens has set aside a small number of free samples specifically for our conservative friends. All they ask is that you chip in a few bucks to cover shipping. To claim your free samples of Patriot Power Greens, go to greens75.com. That's greens75.com. greens75.com.
This is Robert Hastings, author of UFOs and Nukes, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So the point here is, Kevin Randall, that you looked into the possibility of a test aircraft. You operate under the assumption that anything that might have been classified then would have been declassified in the intervening years. So there has to be a record of it somewhere. There's no possibility that something is just lost somewhere in the sands of time, in a military base or something.
What sort of experimental aircraft that would have been classified in 1947's technology is so far out of date that it's absolutely useless today? You know, the assumption is, of course, that the technology has overrun that position and we wouldn't have to worry about it. The Air Force, if we believe them in this respect, and I certainly do, said that they've done the same thing, looking for an alternative explanation. And they checked those same things that we had and found nothing for it. If you've got some kind of an experimental aircraft going on, there's going to be documentation. Even if one place has lost the documentation, somebody else is going to have it, and we would be able to find it. So, well, of course, that's what it was. We just couldn't find anything. We thought that maybe it was some kind of early experiment to put people into space that had gone horribly wrong and ended up in the deaths of the people involved, but we couldn't find anything suggesting that. And I'd always said that would be a really great story to talk about. Here is this experimentation going on in New Mexico in 1947 that involved human pilots of rocket ships and missile, well, rocket ships, we couldn't find anything that related to that, and others who have checked have gone down the same road. So there doesn't seem to be any terrestrial explanation that we can find that would account for what fell at Roswell.
So, Kevin, let me ask you, some people say that Roswell was a red herring of sorts. I mean, do you think that there are any other crashes or cases that deserve to be looked at that took place the same time period?
If you put it in the same time frame, I don't think so. We've looked at an awful lot of that stuff, and there were a lot of these stories circulating back in 1947, 1948. Aztec would be the one that you would gravitate toward because there was the most information about it. But the evidence for anything happening at Aztec is virtually non-existent, contrary to what some people seem to think in today's environment. We looked at all those sorts of things and really couldn't find anything. The only thing that we could think of is some kind of a psyop. But again, I don't know what would be classified today that developed in 1947. I just can't wrap my head around that, because we know about some of the CIA testing LSD on people. We know about those sorts of things in today's environment. I think they flooded some subway tunnels with LSD to see what the reactions of the people were. So they were doing that kind of really unconscionable experimentation. So
Wait, flooding the subways.
Well, putting...
Which subways?
New York.
Oh, that explains a lot.
Yeah, well, there you go. They didn't do anything in Scotland, so you guys were safe.
I was going to quickly ask you, Kevin, what do you have any opinions either way on, like, Joseph Farrell's research on the Nazi bell? Could that be possibly the origin or some kind of technology that may indeed still be classified if it was, you know, working and used?
There's nothing that we could find that links to that. We could find absolutely nothing that links to that. We tried to explain this thing when we started it. I went into this thinking we're going to go down to New Mexico, Don Schmidt and me, and we're going to spend a couple of days down there, and we're going to come back with an explanation. The first couple of days while we're in Roswell, in New Mexico, it seemed to be that was what was going to happen. We were to meet with this great group in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and it turned out to be a bunch of people who were way off into woo-woo land. I mean, they were really gone and didn't have any information. And we went to talk to some people in Roswell, and their information wasn't all that great either. And I'm thinking, well, this thing is blowing up in our faces. And then we talked to Bill Brazel, of course, the son of the rancher there, and it turned the whole thing around. And I remember as we were heading back to the airport in Albuquerque saying to Don Schmidt, you know, we've got to come back. We haven't touched this deeply enough. And then from that point on, we found the family of Sheriff Wilcox. We found more of the people who had been assigned to the base in 1947. We talked to more of the local people that were involved in 1947, so it became a much better story. But we have been unable to find anything that would link it to a PSYOP experiment, some kind of hidden experimentation on the effects of psychotropic drugs. We couldn't find anything that would suggest it was some kind of PSYOP operation to fool the Soviets for whatever reason. We couldn't find any evidence that it was the Soviets. And for a while there were people talking about, well, the Soviets had developed TU-4, which was their copy, down to the last detail of a B-29, and it could have been them flying their B-29 to New Mexico just to prove that they could.
It's kind of like Samsung copies the iPhone.
I'm not going to go there because I don't want to get involved with Samsung or Microsoft in a lawsuit. So
they're not going to sue you. I assure you I've been doing this for years, and if they would sue me, I might make money out of it, so don't worry.
Well, they're a lot bigger than I am, and I have no complaints about my Samsung phone or my Samsung smart TV, so I'm happy with them.
Well, you got to watch out, though. Certain Samsungs, the battery blows up.
My phone is too old to blow up.
Okay, well, that's certainly encouraging. If it hasn't by now, it won't. And watch out for Samsung washing machines, because they come apart.
I don't have a Samsung washing machine. My Samsung TV is wonderful. I enjoy it immensely. But we've somehow got off track here.
From a B-29 to a Samsung and an iPhone. I was just thinking if we brought an iPhone back to 1947 and tried to reverse engineer it, or even a Samsung. But seriously. Okay, so you look into the possibility that the Soviets did something to mimic our technology, and they were flying them around, but that wasn't it either.
Well, if you look at the history, you find out that during the Second World War, a number of our B-29s had landed in the Soviet Union because, you know, as they were attacking Japan, they had troubles and they had to go to the closest base to land. So the Soviets had like four B-29s, and they reverse engineered them and created basically a B-29. So the theory was that they had flown one to New Mexico to prove that they had the range to attack the continental United States, but it's a one-way mission, and there's no evidence that that took place. And all their B-29s, their Tu-4s, were accounted for in 1947, so there's nothing missing there. But what I'm saying is we did all of this sort of due diligence in trying to find an alternative explanation. I've got scads of manuals on balloons from the Navy and whatnot, looking for some kind of a balloon experiment that might have covered the situation. And we just could find absolutely nothing that would suggest a terrestrial explanation, which, of course, doesn't take you to the extraterrestrial. It merely says we haven't found anything that explains it in terrestrial terms.
Let's take a look further at all this eyewitness testimony that came up that talked about possible bodies of aliens and everything. Now, before we get to that, let's get to the fact that we're talking to witnesses here to an event that happened 30 years previously. So even though there was some scattered mention of this case up until the late 1970s, it was scattered. Nobody followed up on it. It was three paragraphs in a Frank Edwards book. Who takes that seriously? So, okay, we have all these witnesses that you were locating over the years. How did you allow for 30 years to color their testimony?
Back when we started, I think that the evidence for memory wasn't quite as definitive as it is today, and people were saying things about memory, especially flashbulb memories, which this would be a memory of an important event in their lives, and they would recall it properly and coherently. And, of course, we've now learned that that's not necessarily true either. So back when we began, we thought they were probably relating things to us properly and accurately.
So then, we're going to break in a second. So then, it's just our viewpoint at the time. We didn't realize how unreliable memory can be, and therefore you just took this stuff at face value. I assume, therefore, there must have been a lot of contradictions, so I'm going to have to go into that in our next segment. We have Kevin Randall. We have Gogs McKay. We have Erica Loofs, who's our guest co-host. Chris is on the mend. You're in
the Paracast. Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Neighbors, I want to tell you about my favorite graphics app. It's the award-winning Graphic Converter. You know, Graphic Converter is the universal genius for photo editing on your Mac. Join over 1.5 million loyal users for this Swiss Army knife photo editing app. It gives you all you expect from a top-flight image editing app with tons of features. And most important, it's easy to use. It's also far less expensive than that other app that you can only get by subscription. You know the one I'm talking about. What's more, you can get 20% off with your order right now. So write this down to learn about Graphic Converter. Go to www.lemkesoft.de/gene. Let me spell that. www.lemkesoft.de/gene.
Did you know your car can be hacked just like your computer or phone? Hackers can hijack the signal of your own key fob to burglarize your vehicle in seconds. The Black Hole Faraday Key Fob Bag is a signal-impenetrable shield that stops these hacks in their tracks. Protect one of your most valuable assets. Go to hackproofbag.com. That's hackproofbag.com. And use promo code RADIO to get 20% off. Or call 805-222-4584. 805-222-4584.
We're all looking for safe, effective, and all-natural remedies for ourselves and our family. The solution is Simplex. Simplex oils provide natural anti-inflammatory and pain relief, antioxidant and nerve protection, and is an amazing topical acne removal and skincare supplement. Natural healing at a very affordable price.
Find out more about our non-psychoactive CBD oil products. Go to SimplexSpecials.com. That's SimplexSpecials.com.
A lot can happen in 6 seconds. A rodeo ride, a dramatic basketball win, and the world record holder can solve a Rubik's Cube. 6 seconds is how long it takes for an 18-wheeler traveling at a safe speed to come to a complete stop. And in those 6 seconds, that truck will travel the length of 2 football fields. So please, give them room. Never cut in front of a large truck for any reason. Our roads, our responsibility. Learn more at sharetheroadsafely.gov.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771 for your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
Have you ever wanted a shortcut to getting the underground secrets to making money online and seriously grow your business? Whether it's a new business, a part-time income, or an existing business, you have this incredible limited offer to get a copy of this Amazon best-selling book on .com success for free. Uncover the success factors to make your business ignite.
Go to secretsignite.com.
That's secretsignite.com.
Get your free copy now.
Go to secretsignite.com.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
So we continue with Erica Luke's guest co-host, our favorite moderator, until we have another moderator on the show and he becomes or she becomes our favorite, Gogs MacKay from Scotland, and Kevin Randall, author of Roswell in the 21st Century. And we're talking about our understanding of the reliability of human memory in the 70s and 80s and such, and maybe we were a little naive about it then. So clearly, though, when you talk to a bunch of different people about something that happened 30 years previously, you're going to get contradictions.
Absolutely.
So how'd you weigh those?
We looked at what documentation was available through the newspapers so that we could compare what was being said in 1947 with what was being said in 1990, 1991. I think the one thing that the skeptics pointed out, well, the people said there were 4 bodies, somebody said there's 5 bodies, somebody said there were 2 bodies. And I said, you know, they're looking at it from a different perspective, a different point of view. If I only saw 2 bodies, I'm relating that I saw 2 bodies. Doesn't mean there wasn't another 2 somewhere else. It means that was the only observation that I made in 1947. So we realized that in talking to people whose jobs would have been different, whose participation in the event would have been from a different perspective, that we're going to have those sorts of contradictions. That wasn't the thing that really was turned out to be the stumbling block. It turned out to be all the lying going on. And I had thought, until I read a book called Stolen Valor in the mid-1990s, I did not believe that people would insert themselves into a story just for their 15 minutes of fame. But that's, we found an awful lot of that. You know, the best way to explain that is, at one point there were, in the early 1990s, I think there were 2.5 million Vietnam veterans. I mean, guys and women. There were a few women, but women who served in Vietnam, there were 2.5 million of them. In the 1990 census, there was a question on the census, are you a Vietnam veteran? 13 million people said yes. 10.5 million are lying about it. Why would you lie on the census form? Nobody's going to see it. Nobody's going to have any reason to check it, but 10.5 million people lied about it. And this book, Stolen Valor, just kind of brought all that to the forefront for me of all these guys claiming these horrific combat experiences in Vietnam. And you go back and you'd look at their records and you find out that they'd been clerks in Vietnam. They hadn't served in Vietnam. They'd been in Okinawa or Japan or Germany for their 2 years when they were drafted. Quite a few of them hadn't even been in the military. And yet they've got these horrific stories of their combat experiences in Vietnam. You know, we're now in the age of fake news. There was a documentary on CBS called The Wall Within or something like that. It was talking about these Vietnam veterans with their horrific stories. They didn't bother to check their records to see if they'd been in Vietnam or been in the military. They just accepted everything at face value. And you go back and you look at some of these guys, the ones you could check, you find out they were lying about it. So, yeah, I came to the realization that we've got problems with that as well. Not only do we have the problem with memory going astray on us, I think Elizabeth Loftus did a lot of work on this, that we were reading her stuff as it came out on the problems with memory and how it is manipulated and how it changes, even when you don't mean to. I mean, I think Lydia Schleppi, again, is a wonderful example of this. She original story that appeared in 1976 about being told to stop the transmission. She said that it was interrupted, you know, stop the transmission. By the time I talked to her, it was, this is the FBI, stop this transmission. So she had listened to some other people talking about the involvement of the FBI, possibly the investigation, and incorporated that into her memory. She's telling us the truth as best she remembers it. It's just some of the details have just are not quite accurate.
And sorry to interrupt you, but we're talking about this, and I want to ask you this because people have insert themselves, like you say, into these scenarios. Tell us about June Crane and your thoughts about June Crane.
Oh, good old June. She was a very nice lady, and she had sent me a letter talking about her involvement in this. She was clerk typist, a typist at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And she was talking about how at some point an NCO that they knew came in and told them about this aircraft that came in with alien bodies on it. And then within minutes or within hours, a colonel would come in and said, don't talk about this to anybody. He has a $20,000 fine and 20 years in jail. If you talk about these things, it's classified. Don't talk about it. So we're looking at her story, and she sent me an awful lot. I've got pictures she sent me. I've got some of the original documents of her employment proving that she was in employed at Wright Field at certain times. But then you begin looking at the dates, and they just don't track. You know, she wasn't employed at Wright Field in July of 1947. She'd been employed there, and she would be employed there again, but in July of 1947, she wasn't. So I got to think, well, maybe it was the Kingman, Arizona crash before I realized that was a hoax. But the dates, again, didn't track. She had UFO sightings. She provided names of people. Unfortunately, we couldn't find any of them alive to corroborate what she was saying. But she was a very nice lady. I think she was somewhat lonely. And I'm sure that she was trying to relate to us the truth as best she could remember it, but I don't think her story was accurate. And so, you know, that was kind of where we left it. I got an email from Jim Clarkson.
Yes, in fact, he's a friend of mine, and I interviewed him on my radio show and played some clips that June with her speaking about this.
And I had sent him copies of everything I had, so that he could do that. And he spent a lot of time with her, and I read his stuff on online and everything, but we just couldn't corroborate the timing of the event, when she would have had to have been at Wright Field in her position. And she apparently had a fairly responsible position, even for clerk typists. I mean, some clerk typists have to be cleared for classified materials because somebody has to type that stuff. And you can't imagine a colonel sitting down to type his own stuff, for crying out loud. So clearly she was there. She had the classification, the clearances that she claimed to have. She clearly worked there at periods. She got a nice review. She got promoted. But the timing simply didn't work out. There was nothing in the documentation that supported her stories.
Now, a question occurs to me as we talk about people inserting themselves into historical events, like having service in Vietnam when it didn't exist, or the Gulf War or something. So this is happening with Roswell. As it became more famous, did that basically influence more and more people to insert themselves in the story?
Absolutely. And if it wasn't just the person himself, it was the children of that person inserting themselves into the story. Well, my father told me this tale. The father may have fact told them a tale, and the father may have inserted himself into the story. Now the children are relying on what the father said about being involved in this sort of thing. But you've got all of this sort of stuff going on. And when you check it out, it just simply doesn't work. There's a guy named Lee Reeves. I think his father had been in Roswell in 1947, had been a police officer at some point, been in the fire department at some point. In 1947, he was a laborer in an oil refinery in the area, if I remember the city directory correctly. We can look all this stuff up in the city directory. He was saying that his father told him that he and Dan Dwyer being the father of Frankie Rowe, who said that he'd seen the bodies. Dan Dwyer being a firefighter. And we got pictures of him in his firefighter uniform. And when I went through the fire department logbooks and records for 1947, I found his name repeatedly as being in charge of some of the firefighting activities. So Lee Reeves said that he had gone out to the crash site with Dan Dwyer in their makeshift pickup truck with a big water tank on the back or something. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but it would have been an official fire vehicle, and it would have been in the logs that they had gone out on this run outside the city limits, and it's not there. And Dwyer said nothing about this. We talked to another guy named, I believe his last name is Smith, who had been a firefighter at the time. And Carl Flock in his book about Roswell talks about him saying that they didn't make the run to the outside the city limits and left it at that. I asked Smith an additional question. I said, you know Dan Dwyer? And he said, oh, yeah, he went out there. And I don't know why Carl didn't ask that question, but he didn't. So we have Smith saying, yes, Dan Dwyer went out there, but he went out in his personal car, is what Smith had said. So we got that kind of figured out. So, I mean, there's one point where we got some contradictions and we were able to figure it out. There was no record of the fire department going out there, yet Dan Dwyer said that he'd gone out there. You know, how do you reconcile these two problems? And the answer is he didn't go out there officially. He went out there in a private car, and some colonel from the base, and again, it's always a colonel. It's never a major, never a captain. It's always a colonel, came to the fire department and said, don't worry about this. We got it covered. We'll handle it. You guys don't have to do anything. Smith told me all that from his perspective of being a firefighter at the department in 1947. So the point is, Reeves talked about how his father had gone out with Dan Dwyer. Everything says that story is untrue.
Let's progress more of this unraveling Roswell and to see where it leads and doesn't lead. With Kevin Randall, Gox McKay, Erica Lukes is our guest co-host. As Chris is on the mend, you're in
the podcast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Classic science fiction at its best. Available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
This is Ben Gordon, and if your teeth are stained from coffee, tea, or smoking, Power Swabs is the answer. In 5 minutes, you'll see 2 shades whiter teeth, and in 7 days, 6 shades. There's no messy strips or trays that you have to leave in your mouth for an hour. Just swab your teeth for 5 minutes, and you're done. To try Power Swabs, call 1-800-290-8480. Your bright white smile will have your friends talking about how great you look. Try it risk-free. 1-800-290-8480. That's 1-800-290-8480.
Are you looking to become more self-sufficient? Then you need to have your own energy source. The Solark EMP hardened generator is automatic, maintenance-free, and reduces your monthly electric bill. You can also take it off-grid when you go camping. Contact PortableSolarLLC.com or call for details at 972-575-8875 today. Portable Solar LLC gives you everything you need to start using solar energy in less than 1 hour. Solark EMP hardened solar generator energy insurance for your family or business. Call Portable Solar LLC today.